This is the last presentation this morning, and the talk is on high temperature related to cellular adjustment during flowering, given by Tony Fitzsimons, and Dr. Osterhaus is the co-author from the University of Arkansas. Toby.
It's okay. I've been called a lot worse. Good morning. Hope everyone's here has enjoyed the presentations thus far. But let's go ahead and get started. We all know that high temperature actually does affect the cells during leaves or flowering or roots or anything. High stress is bad. So why necessarily is heat stress a problem? Well, many of the cotton regions in the United States can exceed 41 degrees centigrade, about 106 degrees Fahrenheit. Pretty toasty. And with that, the maximum efficiency of cotton growth, however, is only between 20 and 30 degrees centigrade. And whenever we have these high temperatures, we experience a carbohydrate reduction due to photosynthetic limits. And these limits can be caused with the sucrose, for instance, by the sucrose phosphate synthase actually breaking down in the within the plant. This change in the resources can actually cause the plant to go into more of a survival mode rather than a reproductive mode. And this change can actually cause an increase in the antioxidants, such as peroxidase and glutathione reductase. These are antioxidants that we noticed that actually seem to increase. So we wanted to kind of investigate these antioxidants, to investigate within the cotton flower and what kind of changes there may be. So we first need to investigate our purpose, and that is we need to examine the changes that heat stress may have on the developing flower, such as partitioning effects, antioxidant changes, electron transport rates, proteins, and a little bit of sugars as well. So with the hypothesis, we kind of thought, well, under high temperature stress, the cotton flower rapidly adjusts its varying components. These components also include an increased hexose in the leaves and ovaries, increase in antioxidants, electron transport will be diminished, and protein concentrate will also increase. And this is all based upon past research that we've actually investigated throughout. So this was a growth chamber experiment for 2012 and 2013. And these methods were conducted both at the Fayetteville, Arkansas Alzheimer Laboratory Research Station. We used a Stoneville 5288. This was 80 pots divided into two chambers, so 40 chambers per chamber. Both the candles, the white, and the red flowers were analyzed and collected. So I wanted a before, during, and after for both the ovaries and the subtending leaves. The stress application in one chamber was kept at a 2432. Comfortable night and day, and the stress chamber was a more balmy 24-40 degrees centigrade night and day temperature. And all analyses were actually performed in JUMP 11. So let's get here into the results here. First, we want to investigate membrane leakage. Whenever we have membrane leakage, we're talking about the leaves. The thing that we really need to see is what kind of stress the plant itself is actually experiencing. One thing that I have found in past research is that the leaf is actually quite capable of rebounding. And that rebound effect can be seen quite well. This yellow line down here is actually the heat stress. Within the first day of heat application, that's the changes that actually occur. We indicate a 43% difference, indicating that means the stress, the membrane leakage is increased per se by 43% versus the controls. By the second day of heat stress, we're actually continuing our slide down. However, promptly by the third day and within the fourth day after heat stress, the membrane leakages themselves, that means the plasma membranes, have actually stabilized within the heat stress plants. So you're not going to be able to distinguish much difference after 3 days. Now, coupled with the plasma membrane, you also have the electron transport rate. Electron transport rate involves thylakoid membranes, and those thylakoid membranes also are related to heat stress. And we see something very similar. However, during heat stress, all of the electron transport rates were reduced, followed by this yellow line here. And these letters here indicate the differences between when they're grouped together between the control and we also investigate the heat. So only during the first day of heat stress, which corresponded to the fourth day of control, were actually relatively similar. However, we did notice that the control, though, did peak during day two. However, referring back to before, membrane leakage actually remained the same. We're not exactly sure why that occurred, but we do know that the heat stress was reduced all across the board. So now we need to move into protein concentrations. A lot of research has been done about heat shock proteins. We see an upregulation of heat shock proteins within leaves or ovaries throughout within the plant during either drought stress, heat stress, salt stress. And we wanted to take a look at this concentration of protein and see if it actually did increase. What we noticed on the control, the first thing that we saw is that before flowering, we had about 1.9 milligrams per milliliter of protein concentration per leaf. However, that promptly dropped during flowering and then rebounded again post-flowering. Compare that to the heat, and we just see a linear decrease. So, that linear decrease is quite significant because you can compare the differences just by looking at post-flowering for the control chamber and post-flowering for the heat chamber. We do see some substantial differences. When we look at the ovary itself, we notice more of an arc, kind of trend lined, where before we see a decreased amount of protein rising and then following post-flower. However, we also see, in the heat, we kind of see more or less a linear trend. There is a little bit of an arc, but it's not as substantial. We don't see as near a drop when the heat is with the control. As we move on to peroxidase, one of our antioxidants that we investigate, we see that during the leaves, before flowering, we actually have an increase, a moderate amount within the leaf that drops at flowering and then increases again following. However, in the leaf during the heat stress, this is almost inversed, and this inversion can be we suspect might be related to the amount of stress that's actually on the leaf at the time. But if we look at the ovary, something peculiar begins to take place. We see a linear trend of peroxidase as it increases throughout flowering. And that same kind of linear, of course, not near a straight line linear for flowering during the heat. And we kind of suspect this is because it's a reproductive organ. The plant wants to try to maintain as many reproductive organs as possible. So it's going to change the way that the leaf is affecting, and the ovary is going to act independently. But there might be some things going on, some shuttling, something happening. And this can also be shown really well with the glutathione reductase, another antioxidant. Glutathione reductase, here in the control, we see just a rise. In other words, before flowering, we don't necessarily see as much, and then we see an increase flowering and post-flowering. And that's expected because we see a lot of changes within the flower within those 3 days. However, in the heat stress, we see a noticeable drop during flowering. And that drop during flowering means that more antioxidants, more oxygen radicals are occurring, and that could actually limit some things and actually provide one of many potential variants that actually could promote flower shed. So, but notice that the heat right after flowering, it just spikes straight up in anticipation of trying to hold on to that flower. However, if we look at the ovary itself or the heat, we see a linear decrease, which is actually quite different than the ovary during flowering here. And we see we see just a dramatic difference, and that is by increasing the amount of antioxidants within the control, we could potentially be holding on to more. More antioxidants are able to affect. You're able to attack. By having this glutathione reductase, you can reduce that amount. So now we move into sucrose. We're going to start moving into some of the various sugars themselves. Now, sugars, this was something that was quite was not expecting this. We expected a little bit of a change in the leaf actually over time with heat stress. Actually, we saw no change whatsoever with sucrose concentrations in the leaf. Matter of fact, they were just the same across the board. However, we did notice a difference in the ovary. And that's and we kind of expect that just because of the ways that the changes in the flower that are occurring. But we weren't but I wasn't expecting the actual differences in the change. It doesn't seem like a whole lot. We're talking about 0.02 milligrams per milligram dry weight of ovary. But think about how small these ovaries are whenever they're this size. And so you can kind of just extrapolate just based upon that, compared that to the size of a leaf. And we see that before flowering and heat stress, there is a substantial increase in sucrose. Now, sucrose, whenever it's more or less broken down, is broken down into some of the hexoses, the fructose and the glucose. And I said, we got to have an increase in those. So we said, okay, well, the leaves, we didn't see any differences. And sure enough, we don't see any differences in the control or the heat, which is good. However, as we also see, we saw an increase in the flowering, and we also saw a gradual, similar kind of curve with the heat. But also the heat, so we also saw an increase in the amount of fructose that was available. So we're not sure exactly why, but it might be related possibly to some different factors as to the using those sugars actually as a better sink to be able to draw in perhaps more water to be able to facilitate a better expansion, better survival rate of the flower. Of course, to kind of look at that, we went, okay, well, if we have one hexose, let's investigate the other here. So now we looked at glucose. Again, leaves across the board, almost linear trend straight across. But then we started looking at the ovaries, and we didn't really see much difference. Kind of intriguing, actually. With fructose, we saw a large difference. However, we don't necessarily see the same kind of distinct difference that we saw with fructose. Now, this could also be why, because glucose is used primarily in a number of different reactions, and fructose actually has to have a slightly different cascade effect for enzymatic reactions. That might be something we're picking up. Or the glucose might be changing over transferred over. We just don't know exactly at this point. Some really interesting things with the enzymatics to look at. Starch. Starch is just a complex molecule of polysaccharide. And that polysaccharide with that starch, we said, okay, well, we've got to see some changes here, because we did. With the leaves, nothing really, honestly, I should say. With the leaves, we didn't see any differences. We also saw before flowering, we saw a decrease that rose at flowering and then slightly decreased post-flowering. Again, that's fairly unique, because not many people have actually investigated the leaf difference, leaf characteristics during that time of the subtending leaf. But for the ovaries, something unique I kind of thought was for the control. We actually saw the before and the after and the post-flowering relatively the same, with flowering starch concentrations at least. And that's in my mind I kind of thought that might be expected because of the overall changes that are occurring rapidly during flowering. But post-flowering, that's right there when you have your ovaries fully fertilized, everything's set, ready to go, you're beginning to change. By having an increase in the starch, there's a chance that you might be able to have a better reserve for the different changes that might be occurring. Again, speculation. But heat stress definitely was reduced. So let's do a little bit of recap here. I know there's a lot of things that were kind of brought up. Membrane leakage. There was a definite decrease after day two that rebounded after day three. And by day four, they were relatively indistinguishable. Electron transport rate decreased electron transport rate completely across the board. However, with the most significant difference between the two at day two. Protein concentrations, there was a positive parabolic control, so a U-shape, with the flowering stage having the least concentrations, and heat stress displaying a more negative linear trend. With the peroxidase, we also again saw a positive U-shape parabolic control, with flowering the lowest activity and post-flowering stage as the highest. Heat stress had a logarithmic trend with the lowest activity before flowering. Again, for the glutathione reductase, GR, the control had the lowest before flowering, and an increase that was same as both for the flowering as well as for the post-flowering. And there was also another U positive parabolic shape of the trend line for heat stress with the lowest value at flowering. The sugars themselves, there was really no significant differences between those, which was actually quite surprising. For the starch, though, there was a decrease in the flowering that rose and was maintained. For the ovary recap, protein concentration, there was no real difference between either control or heat stress. In peroxidase, trends were similar, but heat stress ovaries were slightly depressed. For glutathione reductase, control activity was highest during flowering, and heat stress possessed a negative trend with the highest activity before flowering. In sucrose, we had the control with the highest concentration before, and heat stress significantly higher than control before, but similar during flowering and post. Fructose also indicated a change with the heat stress a much higher concentration. Glucose, control concentrations were highest post-flowering, but the heat stress concentrations were similar both before and post. And again, for the starch, for the rise before flowering, the drops at flowering itself, and the heat stress post continued to drop in concentration as we continued along with during the days and times. So with that, I'd like to finish up and give my acknowledgments to Dr. Derek Oosterhaus, and also my research team here, Christine Pilon, Dimitri Loca, James Burke, Tyson Raper, Resources, Cotton Incorporated. I'd like to personally thank them. And with the remaining time that I have, is there any questions?
We have time for one question.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned it, but what did you do in terms of irrigation?
This was all done in a grow chamber, so everything was actually watered with a half-strength Hoagland solution. They were put in 2-liter pots, and everything was kept at a level. Picks was applied during several times in order to maintain relatively short heights. Grow chambers kind of limited in space. But yeah, these were watered daily, so everything was kept wet. We didn't want a drought stress. We didn't want a complication. We wanted only a heat stress. Anything else?
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you very much.